Cat and Moose podcast. I'm Cat.
And I'm Moose. This is a true life podcast where we explore the quirks of being human.
Hey, Cat.
Hey, Moose.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, guys.
How's it going, you guys? You ladies?
Pretty good. I'm in a loud air-conditioned RV in the middle of Moab, Utah. Where are you?
Cat?
Oh, I thought you were asking Moose.
Where are you, Kat?
I am sitting at my desk in lovely South Nashville.
South Nashville.
I'm with you, South Nashville, 379746-21.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Where are you, Moose?
I am in a vehicle in the desert with no eyes on you, which can be dangerous.
True.
But I'm happy to be here. I want to hear how your week has gone, Kat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm happy to be here, too. And I also want to hear how your week has gone. So we're on the same page yet again. Isn't that lovely?
We're so sweet. What great friends.
Isn't it great we meet here once a week?
It's like our therapy with our listeners. And oh, man, I got a text today from a friend that said, I emailed you on the Cat and Moose email and it bounced back. And I was like, yet another death from being hacked. Dun, 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 dun. So are things any better or are they in a stalemate place for you?
Well, it's kind of in this weird stalemate place because I've basically decided to take a scorched earth approach.
So
my former digital footprint, if you will, is just no longer it's just not there. And so I have been wanting to rebrand my company and launch its new name and logo and all that kind of stuff for a while now. And I was kind of thinking, you know, I get around to that and maybe top of the year 2024. And it's like, no, you're going to do it right now. And then I just did the dumbest thing. I decided to go find the name for my company, which I will share at a later date, not now. And I bought the domain at the one website that doesn't have multi-factor authentication.
Oh no.
So that was smart.
Wait.
So
you mean like you bought it not with GoDaddy, but you bought it on buythiswebsite.gov or something?
Right. Yeah. Something exactly like that. Like so stupid of me. Like everybody has, like when I tell people that, they just kind of look at me like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know, man.
You know what? Just go ahead and give out your social security number right now.
Right.
Anyone who wants a piece.
555-212-55-7-4244.
Yep. Yeah. Yes.
If you can decode that, you win Kat's identity.
Yay! Yay! Lucky for you, because everybody wants to be Kat.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I do think it should be doing something for your ego if people want to be you.
Well, gosh, yeah. If it was real humans, I might have an opinion, but I think it's the people that are from those spacecrafts we talked about last week, like biogenetic aliens. I don't even think it's real people that are trying to get my stuff.
No, I don't. I think they're machines that are cranked out to real people at some point. You know, I'm really sorry all that happened. I am, but I also think that you've been talking about changing that name of that company for 15 years.
Right. Ever since I started it, I've wanted to change it.
Which is so silly because I love the name of your company. But yeah, maybe I am believing better days are ahead for the new name. We are never sharing the name of the company because potential hackers could be listening.
And like we've said before, we think they are listening. We think the hack actually came from one of our listeners. Just kidding. Our listeners are so cool. And And it makes me think, like, this is a question that I wanted to ask you guys to get your genuine reaction to, because this whole experience has made me question many things. And the question that I have for you both that I'm curious about is, are we born with a sense of right and wrong, or are we taught right and wrong? Mm.
Interesting.
In the words of Kat, yes.
That does sound like a Kat answer.
Catism.
Were we taught right or wrong, or were we born with it? I mean, I agree. I think it's both. I mean, I think it's a cop. My immediate thought is, I think it's a cop out when people say, well, I wasn't taught. I didn't have a great upbringing. And look, I get it. A lot of us didn't have a great upbringing. Some people, terrible. However, you still get to choose how you behave. And then right and wrong has its own thing here, guys. Like, I had a listener text me while I've been on this trip that said, just remember, there are no rules. And my little heart just jumped for joy. Because I was like...
Is this right before you went, like, screaming and running on the beach?
No, but there is a great story. There is a great story about not having rules, and we'll see if we get to it today.
Okay.
But, okay, so back to right and wrong. I think both, but I also think really our responsibility lies within ourselves to make those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think, Kat?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, like, I want to believe that I just have an innate sense of anything that is not love. Like, I feel like I know I'm doing something wrong. You know, it's like I just kind of feel like if I'm going to, like, shoot somebody a bird, you know, driving down the highway, which I don't do things like that. But it's like if I were going to do something like that, like, there's something in me that goes like, this is kind of assholeish and I probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I really have a hard time knowing, was I just born that way, or is that part of my upbringing, a part of the society that we live in? And it just is kind of a head scratcher to me. And the whole reason I bring it up is with this hacker situation. It's like, I was telling my diabetes doctor today, who you know I love, I was telling her, like, if someone understands technology at the level that they have to have stolen my identity, like, what if they were to do something good with that knowledge? Like, right. why do bad guy things? And then it made me kind of go like, well, I wonder what the hacker's perspective is. Like, maybe they think maybe they're doing good for somebody. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just kind of made me go like, it makes me just kind of wonder, like, do we know in our depth of our souls, or is it taught? I really don't know. So I guess I would give a classic catism and just say yes.
Isn't the definition of a sociopath someone who doesn't know right from wrong, or do they know right from wrong and choose to still do wrong?
Oh, I don't know. We should go to the Google machine and look up sociopath. I wonder what kind of Facebook ads we'd get after that.
Oh, man. Sarah, if you could help us find a definition for sociopath.
Sociopath.
I would love that.
Oh, great. It's a noun. And it's a person with a personality disorder manifesting itself in extreme antisocial attitudes and behavior and a lack of conscience.
Oh, it's the conscience. So they do know what's wrong and they're not choosing to do it. Mm. I think that's what that means. Kat, I think that is a fascinating question, though, because I've been thinking about, it makes me think about, I didn't even have this on my notes, but I've been thinking about being an Enneagram 8. And one of the things that I like to haphazardly throw around is how important it is to take responsibility for your own life. And, you know, like an Enneagram 8, we're pretty stoic people and we're pretty practical people. So, like, we don't have I have a lot of care and compassion for people. But if you do stupid things and you knew what you were doing, I sometimes am like, well, there it is. You know, like, I don't have a ton of empathy, but I've been thinking about this idea of, like, I often say, like, well, you know, you have to take responsibility. Like, ultimately it's up to you and all this kind of stuff. And I think on this trip, I am starting to unpack that a little bit, that idea, and I'm using my two fingers as quotes, of responsibility is really an excuse for me to be hyper anxious of, like, because when I really think about the stuff that is stressing me out, I'm like, often I put the stress of what is everyone thinking about regarding me? Are they thinking I'm doing enough? Am I creating enough? Am I, you know, all the things that people could potentially have thoughts about me. It gets into my head, and then I'm like, well, you know, am I responsible? And that's like this overarching, I'm learning sort of an unhealthy umbrella that I'm putting a lot of energy into. And so anyway, I just wanted to share that. I'm learning that this idea of responsibility is also a little bit of a cop out and bullshit, because really it's just a way for me to blame myself when I'm not doing enough, or I'm not whatever it is that I think people could think about me. Does that make sense?
It really does. And it reminds me of to all three of us, a mutual friend, Andrew Osenga. He has a podcast called The Pivot that is absolutely fantastic. So please check it out if you like hearing people's life stories and how they have kind of game changing moments in their lives that pivot them in a different direction. That same person introduced me to an episode of a podcast, Moose, that I think that you've told me about before, called Hidden Brain.
Yeah.
I am so fascinated. I learned in this podcast that because of technology advancing faster than human capabilities of operating with technology, like, we've got so much going on around us that we're like triggered to where like we like our brains like create this dopamine. And then every time like dopamine's created, then it's like these little gremlins, these little bad guys go and jump on the other side of the seesaw. And that turns into anxiety and depression and things like that. And so it's like, even looking at your cell phone and all the beautiful colors on your cell phone, like, that gives your brain a dopamine hit. And so it's like some things like as simple as making your phone black and white instead of color can help reduce the amount of dopamine that is getting like pinged. And it made me think when you were talking about, you know, putting pressure on yourself, being worried about what other people are thinking and stuff like that. It's almost like it reminds me of those little gremlins jumping on the side of the seesaw that goes, oh, dopamine, that feels good. We're going to bounce over here and it's going to feel bad and you're going to feel anxious.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I think what you're doing as far as like being out in nature, like, I love how you said last week that at one point, you know, a client was in touch with you and you were sitting at a picnic table, like, doing your job, and you had no stress around it. And it's like, I think just being out in nature like you guys have been is probably helping some of that. No,
completely.
I do think so. We had our friend Ruthie flew out to Santa Barbara to ride back with us on the trip this week. And I was kind of processing with her some things out loud that I've experienced on this trip. And one of those things was, I couldn't believe I said it, and I hadn't even thought about it until I said it. But what I said was, I have not experienced depression on this trip.
Wow.
And that's so meaningful to me, because I've learned depression is anger toward inward, and anxiety is anger toward outward. And, you know, I haven't had anxiety much of my life, from like age 12 on, that I can remember. But depression has been more of a recent thing, I would say, probably since my mom's death. Like, it catches me at home, and I don't know what it is at home where it's capturing me. But when I am out here, even if I'm hot as crap or I'm like exhausted because we got up at 6 a.m. this morning to go see Arches National Park, you know, it's like I'm alive. Like, I
5:30.
I'm alive. Like, I feel very alive, and I can't say that I have felt that way before this trip in a long time. So that's been really special for me, to just like recognize that all the parts of me that I thought had died off are still in there somewhere, you know, fighting. And I just needed to get some of the stress that was on me at home off. I don't know what it's been beyond being in nature. I think that in itself is healing, but it's been a really, you know, we're like maybe 4 days until we get home. And, and I'm just trying to like savor every moment, you know, and like work is still coming in and there's stressors still coming in, but I'm just trying to like look at it differently and breathe differently and trying to have a new perspective about everything and hoping I can sustain that when I come home.
Right. Yeah. And you say would you say 4 days from being home?
Yeah.
That means we've been on the road for 27 days.
Well, it's been 4 weeks as of this recording. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty awesome. I'm kind of surprised you guys are coming home. Like I figured I was loading up the cats this weekend and heading out.
Well, it's funny because we get home and then I think it's like 9 days later, I have to be back in Denver for the podcast movement conference that I'm going to. So there's part of me that was like, maybe I should just stay.
Just stay. We have friends in Colorado.
Okay. Last week, you guys, we talked about the movie Twister. Kat, you had some great, we both had great memories from that movie. I love that movie. And our friend and listener, Jen, wrote in to us and said, hey, you guys, just listen to the latest podcast. Love that Moose and Sarah are having such a magical time. You guys mentioned one of your favorite movies was Twister. So get this. I was a camp counselor at a summer camp in Podunk, Iowa for 5 years from 1992 to 1997. In the summer of either 94 or 95, the camp got a call from Steven Spielberg's production company. Do you remember the scene where there's a road that has a massive hill? It goes down into a valley area, and Dorothy, which if we remember is like the name of the actual device.
The machine, yeah.
She's tossed around and spills out all the probes. I know the exact scene she's talking about. And she says, well, that was a road near the camp. They asked if they could use the camp that had a huge field as Mr. Spielberg's helicopter landing spot and production site.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course they said yes. And then they asked if some of us would be willing to help pick up the tornado debris after the scene was shot.
No way.
Apparently, they used some of the construction debris that was already at the camp. So I got to go pick up the tornado debris, not once, but twice, since they had to shoot it multiple times.
You got to pick up trash for Mr. Spielberg.
I know. So the next time you watch, enjoy the fact that I picked up the garbage and waved to Mr. Spielberg's helicopter coming and going during filming. How cool is that, though? I'm so jealous.
That's amazing. Okay, so we were talking about Colorado, and we have a friend. She is an author. Her name is Julie Akison, and she wrote a book that is staged in Southwest Colorado called Cimarron Falls. Have you read this book yet?
Not yet, but I cannot wait to read it. I love Julie, and I mean that they actually vacation in the area that this book is written, correct?
Yes, yes. And that's where I went and did the naked skinny dipping at the hot springs. And I did the Watsu treatment.
You love to be naked in a pool or a hot spring, don't you, Kat?
Well, yeah, I do. And
why not?
I was thinking after listening to last week's episode, I was thinking, worried again about my precious little ego and how anybody listening thinks that I swim around in my pool naked. And yeah, I don't.
I do want to clarify that. It did sound like it was more scandalous than it was. I just love to push people's buttons. I do know you have swam naked. I was not there. And it is your pool, so you get to do that. And so I want to be clear. Right. We do wear clothes. In fact, Sarah has a video to prove that we wear clothes in the swimming pool that's going to be coming out soon.
We've been teasing that video for like 17 weeks. Guys, I'm sorry. There's something going on inside of my solar plexus, and it's causing my compass in life to disorient.
I think you need to talk about it because everyone walks through this. Give it to us and we'll walk you through it. Okay, what's going on in the solar plexus?
I have entered midlife crisis zone.
Okay.
Okay. Say
Tell
more.
Tell us more.
Because you know you have two experts to talk to about this.
Oh, yeah. You've got a coach and a therapist here. And I guarantee you that every one of our listeners has been where you are. So tell us more. How does it feel? You don't have to say any details. How does it feel? Let's just go with that.
I am very much a planner at heart. And I, not that I didn't plan for this, I guess I didn't, but I don't have a plan. And that is scary to me.
Yeah, I get that.
And when you say like not having a plan is scary to you, like play that out a little bit if you're willing. Like is it scary? Like, do you physically feel scared? Is it more like in your head? Like, what is that like for you?
Everything is in my head, but it also transfers into my gut, and I just kind of feel like this just kind of, I don't know where to step next vibe inside of me. And what was the quote you read yesterday? We saw a quote yesterday that was like, you either step forward into whatever's next, or you step backward into...
It was step forward into growth or step backward into...
safety.
Hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was something like that. And it's like, either way, you have to move. And I'm like, numb. I'm just kind of stuck in one position. Because I'm like, I don't want to go back. I don't know where to go forward. I don't want to waste my time and take a sidestep. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm at a crossroads.
I think that's okay. I want to remind you of liminal space. Mm-hmm. And it's the space in between. And it is so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that space in between is so incredibly uncomfortable, because with it comes, at least in my experience, the anxiety of like you said, Sarah, like not knowing what's ahead, feeling like a bit of a failure if you're moving backwards, and feeling like, am I just wasting time if you are making some sort of lateral move, you know? But then it's like stepping forward into growth. Growth is painful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like they talk about how kids have growing pains. It's like it actually hurts.
Yeah.
To
it's
grow.
Physical yeah. pain.
And so like, who wants to do that? You know, it's like, I agree, Sarah, it's very uncomfortable in that in-between space. And are you able to just be at all content in the not knowing?
I'm not sure I've arrived at contentment, but it does, like, it's almost more like compartmentalizing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm able to kind of set it over in this department or compartment while I continue on with this road trip, for example. Or, you know, but don't worry. I've had a few complete breakdowns along the way and just like, I don't know, you know, and they've been very helpful, because even those, I would say, have moved me along, you know, even just feeling big emotion.
Yeah.
I think moves us. It moves something.
Yeah. It moves energy for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most definitely.
I'm going to not be a coach right now and share something that works for me. And I will say liminal space is very stressful to me as well, because when I don't know where to go, it's scary for me because I always am moving. But, I think it's important to find one thing that brings you energy or love or happiness or whatever that is that you're looking for, and just grow that one thing. Even if it's not job related or, you know, all the things that are more socially acceptable, but just brings you joy. Like, I feel like just spending time on that kind of energy can, I don't know, it can at least give you a little bit more life to want to keep going.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I feel like I have a few of those things, And then I tend to get frustrated that those things don't pan out or turn into something bigger. But then at the same time, like, I wouldn't want to do those things in the same regard if they were panning out and paying me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's very Liz Gilbert-ish-esque of yeah. that. Don't ever try to do something creative to make money.
Yeah. It kind of takes away the,
you know,
the magic of it.
Well, it makes me wonder too, Sarah. I'm just curious, like, you guys have been on the road now for 27, 28 days mm-hmm. and are still on the road and still have several days before you come home. I wonder how it's been for you, Sarah, not working on your garden every day.
In some ways easy, 'cause it's completely out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. Like, I am, you guys know, I'm in the yard all the time. More than that, I am anal about mowing the lawn. Mm-hmm. And there were at least 3 weeks that went by where the lawn was not touched and I was not there. But we did have a friend stop by to do something for us. And they were like, just so you know, the yard looks pretty bad. and thankfully that next day, or maybe even that day, it was being cut. But yeah, so I feel very bad for my neighbors and my yard for that time that I did not provide. I'm sure there's a lot of overgrowth, you know, like maybe it needs tending. Oh, it definitely needs tending to when I get home. Is there a metaphor?
Well, maybe there is. I was thinking of it more from a standpoint of you get joy and fulfillment out of being in your yard. And I'm just wondering mm-hmm. if you're missing it. Like, I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. like, is this sense that you're having, maybe having something to do with, I know you're using your hands a lot because you guys are driving and you're out in the wilderness and hiking and stuff like that. But it's like, I wonder if some of that is going to, kind of maybe some of that contentment come back once you have your hands mm-hmm. doing the work that you enjoy so much.
Mm. Yeah, I bet you're right. Even when we were at my favorite place that shall not be named, last week, it was, kind of sad to see it this year in some ways. There was a lot of, overgrown plants and, you know, they had a lot of rain this last year, which is great for California, but, the Parks System Service maybe didn't have as many folks on staff to maintain the grounds. And so I found myself like all week going like, someone give me a weed whacker and some, you know,
gardening shears,
lob off these branches and pick up this bike trail here or whatever, you know? But yeah, I was totally itching to get in there. And
I think it helps you process for sure.
It does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool. And I'm excited for you to get home and see if some ideas or inspiration and or some contentment in being back in your backyard. And I just I hope and pray for that for you. And also just want you to know that as much as you are willing to let me from far away or close up, I'm willing to stand with you in the discomfort that is that in between space.
Thank you so much.
I want to make some kind of joke there, but I'm not going to.
Well, thank you so much, Moose.
I just pictured you guys standing there and me coming around and holding both of your butts.
Interesting.
Oh.
Just a little squeeze.
Wow, what a visual.
I know, it is. Mm. I am believing in reincarnation now, I think.
Yay!
I know. I finally came around.
Congrats.
So there, we've been listening to these books. I've already listened to Many Lives, Many Masters, which encourage anyone to read or listen to. It's only like an hour and a half long on Audible. And then there's the book Journey of Souls, which is this epic book everyone swears has changed their life. And both these books have to do with near-death experiences that have turned into understanding what have happened in their lives through in previous lives through hypnotherapy. And it is fascinating. I mean, these books, mm-hmm. I mean, you could believe if they're true or not, but they're actual stories of people who have had these just incredible realizations during hypnotherapy that some of their trauma is actually based from on previous lives. So they had a lot of fears around, like in this, in the case of Many Lives, Many Masters, that book, it's one woman that, and it's the psychologist was the one that wrote the book. Sorry, he's a psychiatrist. But her story is, I mean, she ends up having multiple lives. And, you know, he writes this book with her permission and all the things that she learned. And, you know, one of the things was she had this huge fear of drowning, and she died in a tsunami. She died in a flood in a previous life. And it was really interesting because, like, he talks about how the focus of the psychotherapy during when she was hypnotized was really to make sure that, you know, he had to make sure he wasn't just trying to find out, like, wow, tell me more about that time, that period in the world, you know? And he really just tried to focus on her trauma. And it was fascinating of once during that hypnotherapy, once she had the realization that, oh, that's where my fear comes from. And then when she would come out of hypnotherapy, he would explain that to her and let her hear the tapes. And all of a sudden, this woman came out of this incredible level of just unhealth from a mental standpoint. She was in a relationship that wasn't life-giving, and a lot of different things. She just completely changed once she was able to work through trauma that had happened in former lives. And, you know, this is stuff that 10 years ago I would have said, y'all crazy. You know what I mean? Like, and me and Sarah and our friend Ruthie and Kat, I got to bring you into this convo, because we were just like, there's a time where we would have been like, it is blasphemous to even listen to these kind of books. And I listened to them, and it's everything we're taught outside of the reincarnation piece. In the book Journey of Souls, which is incredible, you know, there's these multiple cases. I mean, he covers all these different cases, and they talk about their lives and how there's a time between their life on this earth when they die, and there's a spiritual sort of transformation that happens. We Christians would say we go to heaven, but the way they describe it is, there's these ancient communities that believe the Milky Way was the entry into the spiritual world, or what we might say is heaven.
They said either side of the Milky Way is like the one side is the entry, one side is the exit.
Wow.
And that all of the stars in between are the souls on their journey.
Yeah. And you could even go as far as to say, from a Catholic perspective, that that is like purgatory, because what is described in these multiple accounts after people die are that they go to this place, they spend different amounts of time there, depending on the maturity of your soul. And if you are at a certain level where you've learned a lot of lessons, you actually get to choose if you want to stay there or you go back.
Ooh, that's cool.
And so you go back to learn more. And it just, I got to tell you, it gave me a lot of perspective to recognize the stuff that gets to me day in and day out. You know, ultimately, it really is just about loving people and accepting people who can't be loved. And like, I mean, honestly, because like it talks so specifically about the people in our lives that are not in our vibration. So they're the people we don't jive with naturally. We have to learn from them. There's something there to learn from them. So it really made me take stock of my own life and go like, okay, who are these characters in my own life? Whether I choose or choose not to hang out with them, what are they there to teach me? Because if I'm not learning, then I'm dying, is how I would put it. You know, if I'm not taking that knowledge, and sometimes it's very intuitive knowledge, but if I'm not embracing that and going like, oh, I'm actually seeing myself in you and working through that, then I'm going to come back here a lot of times. And I am so damn tired. And the way they talked about this heaven or the spiritual place is just incredible. It's heaven. It's the spiritual experience. It's all the things that all of the religions talk about. And I don't know why we're so afraid to believe that we might come back as the same soul in a different body.
Yeah, I don't know. And when you say we, I don't know that everybody is. Like, I know, I remember when we talked with our friend Tori from Maine, and she was talking about how, like, she just doesn't view things exactly the same way that we do. And it's like kind of some of the teasing that we do about, you know, quote unquote Christian stuff comes from places of hurt, right? It's like we kind of, you know, are sarcastic about, you know, people being too Christianese and stuff like that, because it's like, ooh, there was a time in my life where I flung all of my Sarah McLachlan CDs into the ocean because I thought they were the devil.
They were satanic. Sarah McLachlan.
They were of the devil.
Litterer.
Yeah, you littered the earth.
Litterer. And what did I do is I probably killed like 10 octopusi. What's the plural of octopus? I don't know.
Octopi. Octopussies.
Oh my.
Hey, you lobbed up the softball and I hit it. Look, I am not going to let a joke go unclaimed.
That's beautiful, Moose. Thank you so much. Well, on the subject of seafood, so have you guys ever had a Patagonian toothfish?
Wait a minute. We just went straight from reincarnation to a toothfish. Feels right. Okay. What is it called? An Argentinian toothfish?
A Patagonian toothfish. This is going somewhere, I promise.
Patagonian toothfish. I'm not a big seafood eater. So no, I have not heard of that. Is it prehistoric?
I don't know. I don't really know very much about it. I went to dinner the other night at this new restaurant here in Nashville called the River House. I think it was River House. And they offered Chilean sea bass. And I was like, oh, that sounds lovely. I love Chilean sea bass. And when I left, the valet guy that I was talking to, he was like, do you know that Chilean sea bass is just a marketing thing? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he showed me that the Patagonian toothfish is this really rare and wonderful fish. And there's all these things that have happened over the past century to protect this fish. And now it can be in restaurants again because it's plentiful and all that. But all of that to say is that they realize that even though this fish is like light and it's not super fishy, it's white, it's buttery, it's really delicious, that they were having a hard time selling it because it was a Patagonian toothfish. And so somebody decided to rename it the Chilean sea bass. And now it's known as a delicacy all over the world. So,
oh, wow.
Okay, that is actually very interesting. I am looking this up, Kat, and I got to tell you, if you saw what this thing looked like, you wouldn't order it.
Oh, I've got a picture of it on my notes this week.
Like, oh my,
I know exactly
gosh.
What it looks like.
It's funny because like every other photo is what it looks like when it's grilled. So it looks like delicious on top of some asparagus. But this thing has some big old lips. It is not cute.
It is not cute. And so speaking of reincarnation and past lives, I'm wondering if that's my next one.
I'm hoping, no, I asked the same thing because I would like to be put inside of a dog or a cat personally. I feel like my personality fits a cat more than a human, but Sarah did not think that you could choose animals, which is kind of sad.
I'm not sure, but I do have questions about animals because I do think that they have souls.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay, let me Google this real quick. Wait, what? Reincarnation.
Do animals have souls?
No, reincarnation. Can I come back as a cat? Okay, let's see what Google says.
You come back as Cat Davis.
Okay, so, you know, I really like Reddit because you're asking the people. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're really asking the people.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is what I found. I had a cat so her cat was convinced that it had been some sort of model in its past life.
What? Wow.
First of all, she was so beautiful. But beyond that, every time the camera came out, she would strike a pose. Oh, this is really good. Waiting for the photo to be taken. I am an animal communicator and a psychic medium, and doing my work, I have learned a lot from speaking with the spirit both animal and human. I see that so many people don't believe that animals can reincarnate as humans or vice versa. To me, that is such an unbelievably arrogant, egotistical human thing to say. I would agree.
Wow.
But anyway, she ends this with a picture of her kissing her cat. Here's a picture of me and my little girl who was a model in her last life. So I just want to say the people out there say a cat can be reincarnated as a human and vice versa. So
that was just one person.
Yeah. I mean, guys, it's just opinions out here on the internet.
What do you guys think?
I think first of all, you know my soapbox here, Sarah. I don't think any of us know. And yeah. So to me, it's like for anybody to definitively say you can or cannot come back as an animal or an octopus or a dragon or whatever it is, it's like I just call bullshit on all that because none of us actually know. Right. And so I tend to hold the belief that I don't know. And I just really hope that if there is another life for me, I hope it is within a body and within a being that is even more enjoyable than this life, because this life is really enjoyable. It's got a lot of hard stuff in it too, but it also has a lot of really great stuff in it. So it's like whatever's next, I just hope it feels like kind of the next step toward, you know, absolute enlightenment.
I love that. I feel like we need a song to end this episode with. What is the song from the movie Ghost?
Let's see. Not Unchained Melody.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's see if this plays.
Oh, yeah. My darling, I long for your touch. We should recreate the scene doing the pottery.
That would be amazing.
All three of us.
Yes, yes, 100%.
Who's going to be the big spoon and who's going to be the small spoon? That's the question.
I'm definitely the bigger one.
I'll be the clay.
Special thanks to our producer, Sarah Reed.
To find out more, go to catandmoosepodcast.com. Cat and Moose is a BP production.